Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 50 from Canto 8, Chapter 24. Matsya. This is being spoken by Satyavrata, the king, to Lord Matsya. Achakshur andhasya yatangrani kritas. Tata janasya vidusho buddho guru. Tramarka drik sarva drisham samikshano. Vrito gurur na swagatim bhubutsatam. Achakshur andhasya yatangrani kritas. Tata janasya vidusho buddho guru. Tamarka drik sarva drisham samikshano. Vrito gurur na swagatim bhubutsatam. One who does not have his power of sight. Andhasya, for such a blind person. Yatta, as Angranihi, the leader who goes first. Kritaha, accepted. Tata, similarly. Janasya, such a person. Avidushaha, who has no knowledge of the goal of life. Abuddha, a foolish rascal. Guruhu, the spiritual master. Tvam, your lordship. Arka drik, appear like the sun. Sarva drisham, of all sources of knowledge. Samikshanaha, the complete seer. Vrittaha, accepted. Guru, the spiritual master. Na, our. Svagatim, one who knows his real self-interest. Babutsatam, such an enlightened person. Translation. As a blind man being unable to see accepts another blind man as his leader, people who do not know the goal of life accept someone as a guru who is a rascal and a fool. But we are interested in self-realization, therefore we accept you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as our spiritual master. For you are able to see in all directions and are omniscient like the sun. Purport. By Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul, being wrapped in ignorance and therefore not knowing the goal of life, accepts a guru who can juggle words and make some display of magic that is wonderful to a fool. Similarly, if a foolish person accepts someone as guru because he can manufacture a small quantity of gold by mystic yogic power. Because such a disciple has a poor fund of knowledge, he cannot judge whether the manufacture of gold is the criterion for a guru. Why should one not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, from whom unlimited numbers of gold mines come into being? Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. All the gold mines are created by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, why should one accept a magician who can manufacture only a small portion of gold? Such gurus are accepted by those who are blind, not knowing the goal of life. Maharaj Satyavrata, however, knew the goal of life. He knew the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he accepted the Lord as his guru. Either the Supreme Lord or his representative can become guru. The Lord says, Mam eva prapadyante, maya metam taranti te. One can get relief from the clutches of maya as soon as he surrenders unto me. Therefore, it is the guru's business to instruct his disciple to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he wants to get relief from the material clutches. This is the symptom of the guru. This same principle was instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yari deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. In other words, one is advised not to accept a guru who does not follow the path of instruction given by Lord Krishna. So, there's some newer people here, so I want to ask particularly you two, seated in the bench back here. Have you been attending the morning class, and do you know the context of this discussion, or should I help you with starting with the context, because the others already know? Yes. Okay. One little thing. Someone make sure that he has a songbook, because during Jai Radha Madhava, you knew to look in the songbook, but apparently you don't have a songbook, so you supply him one. Okay, so this is a section from Srimad Bhagavatam that's describing one of the forms of the Lord that appear in this world. The Sanskrit word is avatar, same as the movie. That's where they got it from. It's a Sanskrit term. One who descends from the spiritual realm into this realm. And when the Lord comes into this realm, there's many things that he's doing, principally three described in Bhagavad Gita, and this form does all three. He gives protection to the devotees. He reduces the influence or eliminates the demoniac persons who are giving disturbance in the earth. And the third is he gives teachings, establishes principles of dharma, or the codes of conduct for human society. So this is a pretty unique form of the Lord, Matsya, and he comes specifically because there's this really devoted king, exceptionally devoted king, highly qualified king, and he wants to reciprocate with this highly qualified king, and he wants to engage him in some service for him. So this is unique in the amongst the forms of the Lord. But he appears however he likes to appear, because he's not confined to any rules. He makes the rules. And he appears in such a way that the king doesn't initially understand anything about his divinity. But the king, being compassionate, because he's not only a powerful king, but he's a compassionate, powerful king. That means compassionate, powerful kings only use their power for giving protection to those who they're ruling over. They don't use their power for anything else. They're very compassionate. So one time, this king was drinking water from a reservoir of water, and in his hand appeared a small fish. So he put the small fish in a container, like a clay pot. And suddenly the fish grew beyond the size of the clay pot. So he put the fish into a larger vessel, and he outgrew that. He put it in a lake, and he outgrew that. Put it in a river, he outgrew that. He put it in the ocean, he outgrew that. And then the king realized, wait a minute, this isn't a fish. This is a, it's not just, you know, it's not just a mystical entity. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he was a devotee. So there was a reciprocation between the two. And then, because this is Lord Vishnu, or the Supreme Lord appearing in this form, he conveyed a message to the king. Very soon, I've appeared for the purpose of giving protection, as you're the king and you give protection to all entities, not just humans, but all entities, including little fish, just like you did. So there's going to be a partial annihilation within this universe, and I want you to assist me in placing male and female, or one of each kind of all the different species, into a large vessel, boat. And when this inundation, partial annihilation comes, all living entities go there along with great sages, and I'll help take the boat that has all these living entities, so that when the water subsides, the universal affairs can continue, because they'll create offspring and the universe can carry on. So this is a nice service for you. And so the king does as the form of the Lord appears in requests of him. And then there's this instruction part. So the in this section, the king is offering his prayers to this form of the Lord. And he understands, as stated, he understands this isn't ordinary. It's not even extraordinary. This is the Personality of Godhead. So he's face to face with a most unique form of the Lord, but that's fine with him, whatever, however the Lord wishes to appear, and whatever he wishes him to do, he's ready, because he's this quality devotee. King Satyavrata is his name. The King Satyavrata is speaking this verse, saying to the Supreme Lord, I accept you as my spiritual master. Now, ordinary, one doesn't have the opportunity to speak directly to the Personality of Godhead. In the case of, for example, in the case of Arjuna, in Bhagavad Gita, he had the opportunity to speak to Krishna directly. And there's other examples of this. Unique. And such a person can then accept Krishna, who is speaking to them directly, as their spiritual master. And if one doesn't have that good fortune, or exceptional fortune, then one should accept as a spiritual master one who has heard from the Personality of Godhead in disciplic succession. That's the teaching that Krishna gives in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. So the message here is the king is accepting Lord Vishnu, the Personality of Godhead, here as Matsya, as his spiritual master. And then the contrast is also, it's one of the tools of education to explain something. I learned this from Bhurijan in The Art of Teaching. One of the standard methodologies of teachers teaching something is they explain what the something is and they contrast it with something that it's not. It's called compare and contrast. There may be some points of similarity, kind of like a Venn diagram. There's this circle and that circle. There may be some overlap, but there's compare and there's contrast. So what something is, to help understand what something is to understand what something isn't. So it's a definition of inclusive, exclusive, or compare and contrast. That's what's going on here. And so what a real teacher is being described, and what a real teacher isn't is being described. And a real teacher isn't one who doesn't know the goal of life. And within the verse, the Sanskrit that's really small should be bigger for tomorrow's morning class. The goal of life is sva-gatim. Sva means self, one's true self. And gatim means goal or value or something that's the goal of life, sva-gatim. So a person that doesn't know sva-gatim is not a qualified teacher. They don't know the goal of life, but they're presenting as if they know the goal of life and saying, this is the goal of life. And that's the goal of life and so many things. Goal of life. That person who presents themselves that way isn't complimented very much in this verse. He's a fool and a rascal. It's not nice language. So, a-buddha-ha. A-buddha-ha. Buddhi means their spiritual intelligence, and put the prefix a in front of it, it's negation. They don't have intelligence, so they're foolish. But the foolish person presenting themselves as if they know, and they're teaching something that they don't know, that's cheating. So not only they're foolish, but they're a cheater. And they're misleading innocent people. And generally, people know that they're misleading. Or even more unfortunate is they don't even know that they don't know, and they think that they're giving something, and they're leading people in the wrong way because they don't know. And some people are, literally they don't know, but they're saying that they know. So that's the contrast. Now, this is a quiz question for those of you who've been around for a while. This very same metaphor that's being used by King Satyavrata, where else does it appear in Srimad Bhagavatam? The blind leading the blind. Does anybody know? In fact, the same Sanskrit language, sva-gatim, is used. It's Prahlad Maharaj speaking to Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj is a little boy who's like King Satyavrata. He's perfected being. And his father is the opposite, as far dark in ignorance as you can go. And the little boy is speaking to his father, Hiranyakashipu, that his father is asking him, you're a little boy, you're going to school, what's the best thing you've learned in school? And his answer is, people that are like you, they don't know what's good, the best thing. It starts, na te vidu, svarta gatim hi Vishnu. That's how it starts. There's this sva, there's a little for arta, sva gatim, sva arta gatim. Arta means that which is desired. Na te vidu, they don't know. Vid, that syllable in Sanskrit means to know. Vid or vit, depending upon the case of the term in grammatical case. But vid means to know. Na te vidu, they don't know. Sva arta gatim, they don't know the goal of life is Vishnu. Darasha ye, Darashaya, their dur, ash. Ash means desire, and dur means bad. Durashaya. They have bad desires. Durashaya. Yea, bahir arta. Maninas. Manina, their thinking is enjoying objects outside of themselves. Not finding happiness within themselves. Bahir arta maninas. Darashaya. Darashaya. They have bad desires. What are they? Desires to enjoy objects of the senses. That's the goal of life for such people. Materialistic life. Materialistic life are people that don't know the real purpose of life. They're living like animals. You know, there's an object, go for it. There's an enemy, fight. And there's someone you disagree with, have a quarrel. And so forth and so on. It's totally self-centered in an illusory sense of self. Little islands unto themselves and creating their kingdom of power, even within their friendships and relationships and family and whatever, what have you, nation and society and community and friends and enemies. Natevidu svartikatimi vishnu darashaya ye bahir artamaninas. That's the first two lines. And then the Sanskrit is very similar. Another element of the Sanskrit of this verse on the board for this morning and what this little boy Prahlad is saying to his father. Andha. Andha. Andha is persons who are blind. And Andhasya is in this verse. Andhasya, it's a tense. Unto those who are blind. But Andha, blind. And then there are persons that are leading those who are blind who are also blind. So, in this morning's verse, the Sanskrit is agrani achakshur antasya yata angrani. Angrani is leader. And the leader who doesn't know the goal of life. The blind leading the blind. So, Prahlad says the same thing, just Sanskrit is slightly different. Upaniyamana. Andha yatandhaya upaniyamana. Those who are blind, yata means like or as, just as those who are don't know the goal of life or leading other people that don't know the goal of life, that's a problem. Both, including the leader and the follower, are bound by the laws or the ropes of material nature. Isha tantriyam. Isha tantriyam. Bound. So, one can say, you know, what's the goal of life? Well, become free from the bondage of material existence. No, that's the negative. What's the positive? What's that like? Where there's a life of full devotion to the personality. You got it. That's how you get there. But persons that don't know that goal, they're very much bound by the laws of material nature. That's what happens. When you engage in material activity, you're bound by the laws of nature, the laws of karma. And how to get free from the laws of karma? Nate vidu. They don't know. But, in the purport of this morning's verse, there are two classes of people that are identified as persons who don't know. One who are good at, those who are good at word jugglery, and they don't know. And those that are mystics, that produce some mystic display, and people go, oh, you can do some mystic display, you must be God. He doesn't name the name, in conversations he'll name the name. But there was one, famous or infamous teacher, yogi and mystic, had claimed that he was God. And the proof? He'd move his hand like this, and on his hand would appear gold. Oh, you must be God. And people would accept and just, you know, to this day, say, oh, he's God. And then he would do things that godly people do. Make songs that are glorifying Krishna, and then the message is, I'm Krishna. And such a person is, you know, there's lots of things you can say about such a person. But they're dishonest. And foolish people don't know. And when you meet those people who don't know and hold such a person, that person or others like them as God, you know, it's a difficult situation for a devotee to be in, because you know they're being misled. And you want to say, excuse me, my dear friend, but you're being misled. But these people don't want to hear they're being misled. They're happy being misled. And conversely, you tell them, you know, what it means to not be misled, and they don't like it. It's strange. It's unfortunate, but it, as Prabhupada would say, this is going on. So, at least, you know, one question is what to do about that. Another question is to protect ourselves from such a misfortune, what should we do? Well, the second one is an easier question. What we should do is become conversant in this knowledge that's coming from Krishna and through the disciplic succession from Krishna, which is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. That's what we should do. We can protect ourselves from the influence of ignorance and sentiment that's guided by ignorance or ignorant desire by proper knowledge. There's protection. Therefore, it's important for us to read Prabhupada's books and discuss the topics therein. And it's important to also extend the opportunity to others to receive this knowledge. In various means. A very simple one is distributing books. But in other forms, just like we're doing right now, a discussion, and, you know, there's a camera, and who knows, somebody knows, if other people that are remote also hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. So to propagate the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is an important antidote for ignorance. So people will know what's the standard of being a guru, and who should I accept as a guru? One who carries the message of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. That is, you accept the personality of Godhead as the goal of life. And if you hear someone saying otherwise, na tevadu swarta katim hi Vishnu, someone says, no, not Vishnu, then, you know, with a smile you can say, that's not right. A nice example of that, for those of you that have been around a while, when Bali Maharaj, who is in the category of the daityas, or the king of the demons, when his spiritual master, Shukracharya, said, don't surrender to this Vamana, because that's Vishnu and he'll take everything, you know, one of the replies is, well, that's what scripture says. You surrender everything to Vishnu, so I can't follow that instruction. Don't surrender to Vishnu. But the scripture says surrender to Vishnu. So that's an instruction I can't follow. Plus, I've already given my word, I can't go against my word. So that's another reason. You asked me to violate Dharma of maintaining my word. Even you gave me a tricky way to get out of it. But, you know, I gave my word. I don't go against my word. But my word was for a higher principle. So, with knowledge, one can not be misled. It's important to not be misled, and especially in a world where there's so much misinformation, as soon as you seek information, you get bombarded with misinformation. There's a lot of people that are subject to misinformation and are confused or something. Unfortunate. Thinking of several other things, but I'll just mention one of them. By reading, one of the benefits of reading Prabhupada's books is that there's a lot of clarity about, we'll say, what's what, sambandh gyan, an understanding how to discern what's what, because, you know, there's a methodology of this descending knowledge. So as an example of that, I've mentioned this several times, but it made a strong impression. 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada was giving a class on the topic of the importance of accepting a spiritual master. And it's not the first time he had said it, but he said it again and again and was explaining it. And right in the middle of the class, one fellow didn't even raise his hand, he just blurted out and said, "Swamiji, you speak so much about the importance of accepting a bona fide spiritual master. How do you know who's a bona fide spiritual master? How do you find one?" Prabhupada, you know, stopped the class and just addressed the young man, saying, interestingly, if you want to buy a diamond, you must first, before you go to the market to buy a diamond, you must know what a diamond is. Because otherwise you go to the market and you'll be cheated. In fact, I mean, not far from 26 Second Avenue is Chinatown, and in Chinatown there's a whole bunch of diamond shops, and it's for sure one of the first things that diamond shop merchant will do is see if the person who's coming into the shop knows what's what, because they have diamonds and they have plastic and they have cut glass. And depending upon the knowledge or the ignorance of the person, they'll show them the same price but different object. Because that's what merchants do, at least in some places. Chinatown is famous for it. So, and he said, because otherwise you'll get cheated. I heard a little appreciation of Tamal Krishna Maharaj from Kastuba Jitendriya. You know Kastuba? Yes. And it was an occasion of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's Vyasa Puja or something like that. And so we were at the end of a class just having people share things about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I'm not sure the context was right, but Kastuba was saying that my guru, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, was not only like amazingly brilliant in terms of his ability to give Krishna consciousness and spread Krishna consciousness and explain Krishna consciousness, but he was also street smart. And he gave an example exactly on the point that Prabhupada was speaking. Kastuba accompanied Tamal Krishna Maharaj to go purchase a watch. And he was very specific, "I want a watch that has a crystal face to the watch, not plastic." So the man said, "Here's one." And Tamal Krishna Maharaj took the watch face, placed it on the glass counter, and said, "Now if this is crystal, it's not going to break. I'm going to rub it against the glass. Yes, like looking at the eye of the merchant to see, you know, is he going to freak out? Because he'll, you know, you're telling me it's crystal and it's not going to, it'll cut glass. If it's glass or plastic, it'll break. So you sure it's crystal? And the man very calmly said, I'm sure it's crystal. If you scratch the glass top, you're going to have to replace it. It was like a chess game. So he said, you know, he's street smart. He knew that people cheat, and he knew what the quality of the real thing is, and was testing the man. So back to, one needs to know what is the qualification of a spiritual master. And Prabhupada is referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ye Krishna Tattva Se Guru Hoy, one who knows the science of Krishna, Krishna Tattva. And the science of Krishna comes in this descending manner, and one that's this, back to the purport. One who is a scholar may say so many things that sound, you know, interesting, but if they haven't reached the conclusion of surrender to Krishna, then we don't accept that person. And there's lots of such persons who have scholarly capacity that don't accept Krishna as the personality of God, and you should surrender unto him. And by their life's example, they're demonstrating that. That's a qualified person to hear from, and not otherwise. So by reading Prabhupada's book, we're protected. By not reading Prabhupada's books, I've been visiting colleges since I came back from India, and I'll just share with you, there's a lot of people out there who are searching, and sincerely searching, and sadly being misled. Sincerely searching and sadly being misled. And then once they bought into a misleading notion, it's hard. Although, you know, they're not old yet, they're young and, you know, should be open-minded. But, you know, surrender to Krishna is a big pill. And not surrender to Krishna and be spiritual, that's a nice pill. And there's a lot of it out there. So, but sincerely searching. So, it's nice to find someone who really wants to know, and you give them the thing that's really real, and the light goes on, saying, you know, I wasn't satisfied with all these other things, but this is real. It's very important to make, at least provide the opportunity for persons who want to know to have the real thing, and let them choose. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, now I explained, you consider and do what you feel you must do. So that's a service, and a very important service. And it's a very important service that helps us become dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by assisting Lord Nityananda, and that way become dear to Radha and Krishna. It's part of our path to Goloka, in loving relation with Radha and Krishna, to do that nice service. It's directly connected. It's not remotely connected. It's directly connected in our path of progress to the goal of life. Any discussion? Yeah.
Maharaj, you told the persons in India sincerely searching for the spiritual master, but they are misguided.
Yeah.
But I remember, if you are sincere and genuine, Krishna will help.
You remember one time when I did what?
If you are sincere and genuine, you are searching, then Krishna will help.
We make an effort and Krishna will help? That's, sure.
How to understand that?
Well, that's Any one of us, I'm sure yourself, but any one of us, before we encountered Krishna consciousness, were there other options that were presented and we ruled out? Krishna helped us. And he sent something genuine. And when that something genuine came, it may have taken some careful examination period of time or something, but then came the yes. That's also Krishna's protection. So it starts with a Dao Shraddha. That's where it starts. And then the rest flows. Krishna reciprocates. We have to say a number of yeses along the way, but including Sadhusanga. Krishna sends such persons. Then we can contemplate and say yes or no or maybe. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, recently we have been doing a lot of door-to-door book distribution. And the books that we give is like Bhagavad Gita.
Primarily.
So I was thinking that if, I mean, most of the people we go to their house are from an Indian background and very pious.
Pious or impious?
Pious.
Pious.
Yeah.
Okay.
They receive well. So
that's nice.
So at the same time, I have a little doubt if when one reads the Bhagavad Gita, how much of it can they actually understand? Should we follow up to check with them or some guidance that needs to be followed or accompany a small book with the Bhagavad Gita? What should be a good approach?
There's many good approaches. And a lot depends upon your faith in the process itself and the faith that Krishna will inspire you from within. And it may be sufficient that they just receive Bhagavad Gita, period, and it may be, depending upon the circumstance, you may feel, in addition, why don't you start with this one that's, you know, simpler or... It can be like very, very, very simple. Or a pamphlet or, you know, something that's just like small little bite-sized and chewable and easy to understand. And read this one. If you have any questions about this one, here's the contact information. Or, you know, each of us are different in our inspiration. Sometimes someone just, by sheer enthusiasm, you know, let them know. You may not understand everything, but please appreciate. Then you say what there is to appreciate about it. This is a classic literature that for thousands and thousands of years, wisdom has been transmitted and shared and received, regardless of people's background and tradition and faith and practice. So it's that kind of literature that you may not understand it right away. And... you know, be reassured that that's okay. Because, you know, the power or the potency is there, and in the course of time, it'll become more recognizable. There's resources to help you understand. You know, one of them is, here's my contact information, or here's a way that you could, whatever you know, different devotees are inspired in different ways. You know, when you do something like that, the message to them is you're not just interested in getting their money and they take the book, but you're interested in them. So you, somehow or other, you convey that message, however it suits you. And that's what's going to touch them more than, you know, whatever else you may give them. It doesn't have to take, you know, a big, long thing. Sutra-like, but, you know, genuine. And then there's this, you know, flood that we don't know what's going to happen, whether they're going to, you know, supposing you distribute, I mean, this is just for example, supposing you distribute or your party distributes 100 Bhagavad Gitas in a day. And out of those 100 Bhagavad Gitas that are distributed, one person gets it. And then, you know, another group is being more meticulous about are they going to understand it, and they distribute 10 Bhagavad Gitas or 20 Bhagavad Gitas. And they don't meet that special person that was out of the 100 that's going to understand it. So there's something on both sides that says quantity and personalism. So it's some kind of a empowerment by Lord Chaitanya to the representative of Lord Chaitanya how to best interact with, and experience teaches a lot. And just be very clear what the goal is. The goal is just be the instrument of Lord Chaitanya's descending mercy. And it's going to come out differently. Even, you know, from the same person from time to time, it'll come out differently. And grow and modify and transform. And we want to be the instrument of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's a high service, so I have to be pure, and that's my responsibility. Yes.
Thank you.
When we meet people and they're starting to take
what
up...
What happens?
When we're meeting people,
when you're meeting people
and they're actually starting to take up the process. And
they're starting to take
like
up
very,
the process.
Very new.
Very new, starting have, to take up.
Yeah, and they have these misconceptions. And
that you're mumbling. And then to what?
They have these misconceptions.
They have misconceptions, no.
And they're from being misled.
And they're being from being misled. Okay, now what?
I find it difficult. Oftentimes, we have to tolerate their misunderstandings because they're not able to be corrected. Or maybe I'm not empowered enough to correct them properly. So my question is, do we try to correct them on their misunderstandings in the beginning, or do we allow the process to purify them, or for them to hear, keep reading, and or do we allow them to keep with their misconceptions?
Okay. Is everyone clear what the question is? Okay. I would say it depends. Depends on you and depends on them. It depends on time, place, circumstance. Two things, minimally. One is austerity of speech from Bhagavad Gita. Austerity of speech is speaking the truth palatably, and the purport Prabhupada explains you shouldn't instruct others unless you have the relationship of the instructor. So the first order of business is the relationship. So in that establishing of the relationship or a relationship is trust. You don't intrude because they have misconception. You establish, you know, a relationship that you demonstrate to this other person, you're worthy of their trust. So a very important capacity of someone that's interacting with new people is they show by example, and they're very tolerant of, you know, what you just described. They don't go in and manage the situation or try to correct the situation. They demonstrate the standard. Good character, good conduct, very peaceful, remaining undisturbed even when there's provocation for being disturbed, etc., etc., etc. The quality, you know, they display the character of a devotee. You know, the items of knowledge, the verses 8 through 12, chapter 13. They demonstrate that. But here's a person, now I'm a new person looking at this person that demonstrates they have all these wonderful qualities. So my heart opens. Because they're a worthy person to hear from. That's first. And then second is either directly or indirectly, have them select something that they can easily let go of. Besides, you know, whether it's a conception or an object. I learned this from one of our bhakta leaders. The bhakta leader sat with the bhakta and they made a list of what are the things that you're attached to. Okay, that's a nice long list. And is there something on this list that you think you could do without just to make your life simpler? And they identify, okay. And so let's take care of that one. What do you think? And that, you know, maybe just, you know, some object. I have 20 pair of shoes. I really don't need 20 pair of shoes. Okay. That's, so what to do about that? How to, or something, or something. So, you know, it's just removing obstacles due to attachment to something or a concept. You know, think about it before you get rid of 19 pair of shoes and you just have one left. Maybe you need one for summer, one for winter. What do you think about that? So, you know, you show compassion, but you're wishing to help them and they understand why you're doing it. The entanglements in material nature. You know, the low-hanging fruit is the phrase. A little, you know, ripened grape over there. Looks really ripe. Let's go take that one. Then you celebrate. Yay! You ready for the next one? Now there's this list remaining. So we're working together towards, you know, involved in this is, you know, perhaps that this is, that's not the only way to proceed. It's just, it's a principle of something that's easy for them to let go of. And through the interaction with that person, they learn it's not so difficult. Even I'm attached. And then at some point, you know, let's take a hard one. But that's for persons that are, there's a trusting relationship and they're already committed to the process. And it may be a misconception. And it may be, you know, objects are more important to them than their conceptions. You know, it depends on the person. Circle back to the first one. To be in a relationship with someone that's really new and taking up the process, an important characteristic of such a person is they have the qualities of a Vaishnav and they're very patient with the other person. And then the next is you're selective about what you address. In a way that's, you know, that the trust in that relationship doesn't get stretched and to the point where it breaks. Now, there may very well be circumstances that a person, you come to know that person, they really need, you know, something hard. And you do that. And again, different individuals have a different style. But this is a standard that I've seen very successful preachers do. They extend Krishna consciousness in that way. They want to encourage voluntary service in a mood of, you know, wanting to serve Krishna or the Vaishnavas. You encourage that. And then qualify in different ways. Look what Prabhupada did. There's a nice example. Okay. I mean, my thoughts are going to the Prabhupada's example. He knew what Allen Ginsberg was. Yet, Allen Ginsberg had some attraction for chanting Hare Krishna and India. And so he engaged him to help him spread Krishna consciousness. He wasn't ready to, you know, clean up his act. He continued to be everything that, you know, all the degraded stuff that his life was made up of. But yeah, I'm sure there's, for his soul, the eternal benefit. And anyway, you get the idea. Prabhupada just didn't confront. He engaged him. And without Prabhupada becoming contaminated, or, you know, this, another classic example, accepting to go to San Francisco with Moby Grape concert and Grateful Dead. And Swamiji on the stage with all that intoxication floating in the air and noise, and he didn't confront them. He engaged them. Now, some persons he confronted, for sure. So he knew. Anything else? Yes, Jitendra. I thought I would get something. Mentioning Moby Grape, I thought I would get it. His historical perspective.
I was reading about Allen Ginsberg. You know, he was telling Prabhupada, he said, "Prabhupada, I'm a meat eater." And then Prabhupada said something to the effect, "Well, you're a special meat eater. You know, you have some special qualifications." So he was encouraging him in that way. But then later I heard that Prabhupada said, "We shouldn't waste too much time with this fellow. He's not really evolving." But those are just some of the things I read. Then I noticed a few other things that I just kind of took note of. It says, when one knows the truth, he knows there's no greater gain. So, and then I like Winston Churchill said, many people stumble upon the truth, but then they keep going. And then I remember the devotees were saying, we go out on book distribution, but the Lord is within the heart, Chaita Guru. So, like a lot of people here, they were actually searching, you know.
Yeah.
But then the devotee said, in the question and answer, he said, well, the devotees are more compassionate than the Lord. They're acting, you know, what is the term? Proactive. They're proactive. So that's even a step higher than the Lord in a sense. It says, I remember finding a bona fide path in Kali Yuga is like a turtle surfacing through a knot hole in a board in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, Prabhupada spoke on that. I heard the lecture.
And, well, then we say that most people aren't really tired of the modes of nature. It's like a big smorgasbord for them, you know. They bounce off one form of sense gratification to another.
They want a variety.
So then we say, people come to Krishna consciousness out of material exhaustion, or they become materially exhausted by associating with devotees. So I think that really, you know, helps.
Interesting language.
And then I remember when Gopal Bhatta was here for the Preaching to the West ceremony, that was about 2 years ago, this May coming up.
Yeah.
And he said that we're actually doing a disservice to the people if we can't present Krishna consciousness properly.
Yeah.
And he was outlining, you know, our shortcomings and our positive points. So
yeah,
I thought that was really reflective of him to bring that about. I thought it was a really successful seminar.
Yeah, it was. Fruit came of it.
Oh, and I like what... somebody told me that Donna Kaylee, when she goes out and preaches to people and they're kind of acting kind of childish in their arguments and stuff, she said something like to the effect, am I speaking to an adult? And, you know, she was on a college campus, so it kind of puts them in a place where they're...
Well, she's a little confrontational in her style. It's just, you know, she does, it works for her.
So, oh, one other thing is, I remember, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we have, the Vaishnavas are said to be above the Brahmins. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur breaks it down and he says, we have, a more ass-like Vaishnavas than swan-like Vaishnavas. Can you comment on that, Maharaj?
I couldn't hear it.
Oh.
And the swan Vaishnav, and what's the other kind?
Ass-like.
Ass-like?
But I was thinking of a Vaishnav, how can he be ass-like?
I never heard that one, Jitendra, so I don't know if I could comment. What's an ass-like Vaishnav?
That's what I didn't know.
It sounds like that's the contrast. Someone that's in the dress, but they're not of the quality. And then there's persons that are in the dress, but they're of the quality. Sounds like.
Yeah.
Because it's a oxymoron, is that the, it's a contradiction of terms.
Yeah.
An ass-like Vaishnav, there's no such thing. So it's a pretending personality, not a genuine personality. It's an imitation of the real thing, not the real thing.
Thank you.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.